From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past weekend at the Emmy Awards. Host Stephen Colbert briefly turned things over to former White House spokesman Sean Spicer, whose appearance sparked gasps in the audience. Spicer dragged a podium out on stage, similar to how Melissa McCarthy had done when she channeled Spicer for Saturday Night Live. And in that brief appearance at the Emmys, Spicer invoked, well, his own lies about the size of President Trump's inauguration crowds. Let's listen. Here's Sean Spicer at the Emmys.
I mean, is there anyone who could say how big the audience is? Sean, do you know?
This will be the largest audience to witness an Emmys, period, both in person and around the world.
Melissa McCarthy, everybody, give it up.
Laughs, yes. He doesn't have very good comic timing, I think I found there. But then Spicer went backstage. He took pictures with many of the celebrities in attendance. There's a photo of James Corden playfully giving Spicer a kiss. The New York Times reported that Spicer is hoping to rehabilitate his image so he can earn lucrative speaking gigs and other media appearances. Was it all in good fun? Is there something healing and helpful about seeing a former political hack essentially confessing to his sins? Or is this something else entirely? You see, not long after Spicer's appearance, the backlash began. Plenty of Hollywood celebs tweeted that they did not find it funny and found it insulting that Spicer would be allowed to yuck it up as if lying to the American people has no consequence. Writers for numerous publications called it a failure on the part of the Emmys and on the part of Stephen Colbert, who had personally invited Spicer. So where is the line? Should we blend entertainment and politics and journalism? Every spring, Geva Theater Center invites local media and public servants to perform in its curtain call. New York City has something similar. Our Karen DeWitt does something similar in Albany. Then there's the White House Correspondents' Dinner and more. Our guest this hour will discuss all of these issues. I mentioned Geva. The artistic director is Mark Cuddy. He's here. Nice to have you back here, Mark. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
Also here is Linda Starkweather, an artist at large here in Rochester. Linda, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's my very first time.
Your very first talking in public, the first time?
Well, talking on the radio.
Well, it's great to have you. Thank you for being here. Chris Thompson is a comedian and activist. Nice to see you back here, Chris. Thanks for being here.
How you doing?
Very good. And Dave Andriotta is a columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. He's also a scribe for the stage. He's had some performances. He's performed and had his plays performed in Rochester. Am I describing that accurately? Is that good enough?
That's correct, Evan.
And when you're in New York City, you also kind of took part in some of the fun there, right?
You're referring to the the Inner Circle show.
Yes.
No, I actually didn't perform in the Inner Circle show.
Oh, you didn't? Okay,
no,
I'm sorry.
But I attended the Inner Circle show. I was an active member of it at the time. And that's New York City's equivalent of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And what you mentioned with Karen DeWitt, it's something called the Legislative Correspondents' Association in Albany. And in New York City, the New York City Press Corps has its own version of that.
Did you see Spicer live, or what was your first take when you heard he had come out and done that?
I was surprised. I mean, I didn't see it live. I was surprised. I heard it the next day. I didn't watch the Emmys. You know, you and I had talked previously before the show about the criticism and the backlash. I got the sense that, you know, I thought the backlash to some extent was warranted, but I thought it was a little bit over the top, to be honest with you. I mean, I thought the joke worked, and newsflash, you know, he's not the first press secretary to lie to the American people, and he's probably not going to be the last. I guess the real criticism was whether he should have been rewarded for it.
Yeah, I think that's what some of this is about. I suspect that's where some of our conversation will go this hour.
Yeah, right, right. And I'm not so sure that it was a reward. I felt it.
Well, hold on.
Go ahead.
That wasn't a reward for Sean Spicer?
To be on the Emmys?
Yes! You don't... Dave Andriotta.
Yes.
The monetary gain that this guy is going to get, you don't think
he was
going to
get that anyway. He was going to get that anyway, would be my guess. Ari Fleischer, I mean, all these press secretaries command enormous speaking fees going back for decades.
So fair enough. So he was going to have his golden parachute.
And let's face it, I mean, he had become a character that Melissa McCarthy was. Like, I'm not defending his lies, okay? His lies are lies. But I'm talking about just in the context of the show and whether or not this was good fun.
Okay.
You know, Melissa McCarthy was being recognized, nominated for an Emmy for her portrayal, right, of Spicer. So, you know, I think it's just a little melding of reality and Hollywood. I didn't see much of a problem with it. I was frankly a little bit surprised at the criticism, although I can understand it, but I was a little surprised.
All right, I think the other person on this panel who also enjoyed that was Mark Cuddy. What did you think when you saw Sean Spicer come out?
Yeah, you know, my wife and I, Christina Sellian and I watched, and I never watched the Emmys, right? I never have time to watch the Emmys, but it was a Sunday night, and we were like, all right, let's kick back and watch it. I guffawed out loud, so did Christina. I checked with her later the next day and said, did you think of it? And she said, yeah, you know what? Oh, just relax, people. I just think people have to relax about that. Thanks, Dave, for taking the first bullet. But it's like, come on. It's a great joke. It worked. It worked because it immediately got everyone really alert. It's when you juxtapose celebrities in situations or doing things or saying jokes or saying things that they would not normally do in their day-to-day life, in their public figure life, it's jarring and it grabs the audience. So I thought it was funny, We call this a sense of humor because it's one of the senses we have that is a reaction sense. We don't think about it. When you laugh, most of the time it's you're responding to something, you're reacting to something, and you know something happens and you don't think about it. You laugh or you giggle or whatever. Then it's afterwards. There's a lot of thought and should we have done that and all this and yeah, you know. Afterwards, you can question, you can make all sorts of arguments, but. I'm all for irreverence, and politics be damned. Politics is a theatrical show, and yes, there were real issues, and we're dealing with. I think all of us around the table are probably. I won't speak for you, Evan, but the four of us, are, you know, we'll probably have a somewhat similar political view, and there's a lot to be worried about coming out of the White House, but. But everyone knew Sean Spicer when he was working at the White House. Everyone knew he was covering. Everyone knew he was lying. Everyone knew that he was putting a good face on bad stuff. And it's not that wasn't a secret. It's just that was his job.
If I could chime in too, Mark, I also think that the joke in question. It was something that was preposterous, right? It was something that anyone with eyes could see that he was lying back in January when he spoke of the inauguration. This is not a heavy policy issue. This was about attendance at an inauguration.
Also, I think because Melissa McCarthy had done that impression, it would not have worked if Melissa McCarthy had not done the impression.
Sure, that's why he was there.
Yeah, I mean, okay. he was doing the live version of what she had done of him.
You want to start on the rejoinder here, Linda?
Sure. I mean, just because I'm the only woman in the room, let me just take the opposite. I didn't watch the Emmys, but I saw the clip. And I have to say, I often go with my original gut feeling, which was immediately I was horrified.
You were.
I was.
Right off the bat.
And I'll tell you why. I think, it's about the rewarding this man for his bad behavior and his lying. And I understand it's entertainment. And I understand the joke worked. But then I took a minute and I remembered that we rewarded another man for his bad behavior and lying by making him president. So, you know, we've opened this door. We've opened this scary door. And unfortunately, I also disagree that everybody knows it's a joke. There's 30% of the electorate in this country that still thinks everything that comes out of his mouth is golden. So, yeah, for me, it was really hard to look at.
So, Linda, you might agree with Murtaza Hussein, who writes for The Intercept. And he tweeted, acting like Sean Spicer is just another funny guy is the same blurring of entertainment and politics that led to Trump becoming president.
Well, we are living in a reality show right now. So I'd say, yeah, we've gone down a slippery slope already, I think.
Chris Thompson, what was your reaction when you saw it?
I'll admit that when I first saw it, I laughed, but then it took a couple of seconds. And I completely understand, like, both your sides. Being appalled is a perfectly reasonable, like, reaction to that. And also laughing it off as, you know, him poking fun at himself for having done something wrong. That's also a good reaction. But I wasn't surprised so much. Because if you go back into history, like, politics and entertainment and even journalism have been intertwined. Like, Woodrow Wilson got a copy of Birth of a Nation and watched it in the White House. Like the Red Scare, like you see these clips of these celebrities that are resisting what McCarthy was doing. But for every one of those who were resisting what he was doing, there were people who, maybe three or four people, who were just going along with it so that he wouldn't get blackballed. And then like all the way up to like, you know, Reagan, a movie star becoming president, Schwarzenegger, a governor, you know, and Reagan, a governor, in fact. So it didn't surprise me that they got him and got him to be on the show. What was kind of upsetting about it is that, yes, he did lie. He never owned up to it. Like, even when
he
resigned.
Well, he did at the Emmys, doesn't he?
Well, he did at the Emmys, but I have not seen him in a serious environment. Like, say, an interview. He didn't go in front of Meet the Press. He didn't go to anybody. He didn't, like, write out a statement saying, look, I did this thing. It was wrong. I out and out lied. I perpetuated, you know, an agenda that was based in lies. He didn't do any of that. He just kind of came up and say, ha ha, look at me. I'm parodying the thing that I, you know, one of the first lies that I did. Oh, well. And now he's on to, I don't know, bigger and better things.
All right. So what I see, Chris, is, you know, Mark and Dave saying he's not the first one to lie as in that office or in that job. He won't be the last.
No.
And Mark saying, you know, the joke worked. You know, and it wasn't the end of the world. It was a sort of a small matter joke. It got our attention. And I hear, you know, you and Linda saying, we're sort of just numb to deceit from government, and that there's an impact to just sort of waving it off and acting like that's the course of business. I mean, are we too idealistic to think that people won't be rewarded? Or and let me also ask you more directly. Do you agree with the criticism that says that it's easier to reward a white guy? You know, that this is a white guy failing upward is what a lot of the criticism was.
Oh, I mean, yeah, definitely. This is another example. We've been seeing this for the last year, like mediocre white dudes just getting away with murder. Well, I mean,
last
this
year,
time,
last hundreds of
well,
years.
Well, yeah. Right? But like just recently. I think the difference is that we've got like more media outlets in which to see like all these crimes that they're doing, or, you know, just like little mishaps that they're doing, they get inflated. So, you know, we didn't have Twitter back in the 1800s. We have it now. So we're seeing all these things that he's doing. We have the access. We're able to actually directly talk to some of these people. I've actually had conversations with some of my favorite celebrities via like Twitter or via Facebook. So like everything's more accessible now. So yeah, like it's kind of like status quo, but people are being surprised at something that's been happening.
Okay. So Mark, you want to?
Yeah, I don't disagree with what anyone's saying, right? We all have our personal reactions to this. I wonder though, you know, the passion we all feel about what's coming out of the White House is one thing. What's in the realm of comedy that's off limits? And I think that's really the question, frankly, that we should be discussing is, are there some things that we shouldn't, that shouldn't be done for a laugh because they have larger consequences?
But can you get a laugh without rewarding a guy who perpetrated a lot of sort of the spread of the message? You know, that's the criticism I'm hearing, Mark. It's not that we can laugh at Sean Spicer. If Melissa McCarthy makes fun of Sean Spicer, mm-hmm. okay. If she wins an Emmy on it, okay. But Sean Spicer now gets to come back and participate in that and profit from it. And that's what people are seeing is why.
He was already doing the talk show circuit. I mean, he's been out there. Right.
So you like Dave are not buying that he's profiting off this?
Well, sure. No, he got a lot of pub, but he made fun of himself.
Yeah,
and he put himself in a one could say a vulnerable position by doing what he did.
Yeah, right. I would agree with that. I mean, he had already been out there, number one. And when you say profit, I mean, we're talking about publicity. We're not talking about monetary gain, although that will often.
Well, there will be that.
Right, it will lead to that. There's no question about that. But yeah, I agree that you know he. He has now acknowledged that his credibility is substandard, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily a reward. He's going to go with that. He's going to go with that shtick. He'll be paid for it. I understand that personally. I mean, that's not something I would want I would not want to stake my reputation on.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, Linda, would you, if Colbert, who Stephen Colbert was the one who invited Sean Spicer and thought this was a good idea, if he were to say to you, I understand your criticism, but think about what we just did. We just had Sean Spicer come out and at least finally stop pretending that he wasn't a liar in that office, and that maybe that 30% that you talk about, that think every word that comes out is gold, now has to look at that and say, the head spokesman just admitted it's a lie, that there is an actual public service to that, even in the course of the comedy.
I hear your question. I guess if I thought the 30% had critical thinking skills enough to get to the, I don't mean that as a slam, but I mean, this is the problem. This is why they believed him the whole time. I was at the Women's March. I know what the numbers were. I couldn't move for 3 hours, literally, shoulder to shoulder. So, you know, yeah, it was funny the next day, but I was there and I knew it was funny because it was ridiculous. We have someone speaking for the President of the United States, which is the highest office in the whole world right now, who is not telling the truth. And there's something, I'm on the edge. I get it. I'm going to be the total stick in the mud here today. I can tell. But
you got competition. I'm going for
that. Let me just say, as a feminist, you know, I'm going to go off topic a tiny bit here, but there is a level of PTSD in this country right now that is only beginning to come to the surface. My partner and I are minorities in many ways. I'm a left-handed lesbian, critical thinking Buddhist, atheist, anarchist artist. So my dad voted for Mr. T. So, and I'm an only child, and he's 88, and I'm supposed to care for him the rest of his life and see him through to death. The incredible inner turmoil that this whole thing has caused, it's a little harder for those of us that are in the middle of it to, yeah, I can see the humor of it, and I like a good laugh too.
Totally agree, Linda. And that's why there should not be 100% the same response to any kind of comedy, especially political comedy. Mm-hmm. That's not working if everyone feels the same, because everything you said is absolutely true. And there should be outrage for people who feel that outrage. I'm not saying that everyone in America should have enjoyed the Sean Spicer moment. I'm trying to take an actual larger look at comedy and its use historically. Let me tell you a quick little story. My first professional production that I directed was a play called Lenny, and it was about Lenny Bruce, who became a real hero of mine early on, you know, in my early 20s. I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, he was using humor in a very pointed way, as well as a lot of other people were. But that kind of outrage, that kind of rock in the butt, you know, trying to cause some reaction, I've always just personally enjoyed. I like outrageous acts of comedy and political humor, and so it created other kind of ripples for me that were different from the ripples for you or for anyone else. What I don't like is for people to say this should never have happened because I'm been personally persecuted. I'm not talking about you, but I'm personally persecuted by Trump's policies, and which many, many people in this country are, and so there shouldn't be that kind of comedy.
But isn't it easier for the straight white guy to say, hey, this lands differently with everybody, and, you know, it's not going to be funny to everybody, but hey, we should all sort of settle down.
Yeah, although I don't think it was a racist, sexist
joke.
No.
No, it's just things are so raw.
Exactly, totally
lying
agree.
About all the other stuff,
I don't think
it
I'm
brings
condoning
it up again.
Anything.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that when comedy does have a tendency to sting, it's rarely the people who are privileged and in power
who feel
the sting. And that's what I'm just trying to kind of open up to how people are feeling about this. I mean, Jamel Bowie, African-American writer for Slate, says the degree to which Sean Spicer has faced no consequences is a glimpse into the post-Trump future. But then there's, I think I want to broaden this discussion to say, Sean Spicer at the Emmys is one thing. There are some people who've been arguing, you know, for a while now, we need to stop with this whole blending journalism and entertainment and comedy. And we shouldn't have a White House correspondence dinner. We shouldn't laugh about this stuff. That we should really be, our job is to watchdog when we are journalists, public figures, and not get on stage and laugh with them. And what I want to do is kind of take the temperature first at the panel about that. And then I want to listen to some comments that were made by the host of the most recent White House correspondence dinner, and that was Hasan Minhaj, who had some strong feelings about this. But let me just start by asking, I mean, and Dave, you're somebody who's, you're a journalist, you're a columnist, but you've also worked in theater, you write for theater. You know, how do you feel about where it blends sometimes?
And you're referring to these types of White House correspondence dinners. I'm sort of split, and I'll tell you why, because I have never known a journalist who participated in one of these events to become compromised. I've always felt that they
were... Well, they're not going to tell you they're compromised.
No, but I've never witnessed it in their work. Okay. I've seen these people close up. My own personal experiences with the Inner Circle show. So the Inner Circle show in New York City is an old-time gridiron roast of the administration, the city hall administration, and the press. And so both sides take a stab at each other. And to be involved in that, from the journalist perspective, you had to have spent time in Room 9, which is the City Hall, New York City Hall Bureau. And there are lots of news outlets in that room there. And I had an opportunity to work out of there for a couple of years, worked alongside of people like Glenn Thrush, Maggie Haberman. These are big names now for the New York Times, covering the White House. They participated in these types of roasts during the Giuliani and Mike Bloomberg years. That's when I was there. And I never saw them compromised. And I think the trajectory of their career suggests that they haven't been compromised. That being said, I think public perception is reality. When the public sees these two sides, public officials and the press, looking as though they're too chummy together, it becomes a problem. And it doesn't necessarily become a problem for the government. It becomes a problem for what we do as journalists and our credibility. Yeah, that's the problem.
That's an interesting point. Our colleague Karen DeWitt, one of the finest reporters I know, is also really funny, by the way. And she participates in, Dave, you've got the name. Why do I have the name? The Albany. It's the
Legislative Correspondents Association, yeah, LCA.
The LCA. And they do that every year. And she has played Hillary Clinton. I think she has done other things, sort of send-ups. I think Karen, I don't want to speak for Karen, I think she likes it better when it's more cutting against the politicians she covers. But she is really funny, and she does it. And I've never for a moment, you're right, I've never looked at Karen's coverage and said, well, you participated in that. I don't know if I can trust you. But I take the point also that you're making that sometimes public perception is something that we have to grapple with in the media.
Sure.
Chris Thompson, how do you feel about this?
I think I feel I'm a little bit on the fence. Like, there's no way. There is no way we're going to separate the two. It's, you know, like once they're mixed, you had two like different colored bags of sand. As soon as you put them together, you're not separating the two. What we should be looking at is how we consume our news. And the way a lot of people, a lot, even younger people, and I'm willing to admit, half the time the way I consumed my information about politics and stuff was from like partially from just going online, usually NPR, but also like going and watching like The Daily Show or, you know, The Weekend Update on SNL. And part of it is because I need like something to cut the seriousness of what's going on. But the other part of it is just because I want, you know, I just want to see something funny. So like separating the two would be impossible. And I think that making them adversarial, like if we were to have journalists on one side and politicians on another, and they're not cooperating with each other, we're not going to get the real story out of Washington. So separating them doesn't seem like a good idea. It would be nice if there was a little bit of distance. Like maybe if there was like, you know, we've have people like Trevor Noah and stuff, who they're not necessarily journalists, but they're definitely doing journalism. But then we have like say some straight men, just like, you know, some serious people that only deal with, you know, politicians and the news in a serious manner, the way like, you know, Walter Cronkite or Tom Brokaw have for years. You know, that would be a little bit better. At this point, I'm not sure how possible that is because nearly everyone has like a Twitter account or a Facebook account, and you can immediately access them at any time. Like I've seen, you know, Diane Sawyer tweet some things off and respond directly to like just private citizens. So I don't know. It just seems like it feels like it's unrealistic to say that we can or should completely
separate
them.
Yeah. Okay. Linda?
The notion of right consumption, and by right, I mean in the Buddhist sense, you know, it's one of the precepts, like we need to be looking at everything we take in, whether it's how we eat or, you know, what kind of media we take in. I agree. Humor is a great pressure release. I love watching the late night things. It's the only thing that's kept me sane since November 8th, to be able to laugh about it. I loved George Carlin, who is, you know, a truth teller with his humor. And I guess for me, that's the humor I go for, is the people that can nail it. Now, the question is that just my truth, right? Or is it and your line about perception, public perception is reality. That's where we've gotten in big trouble, because I think we all pretty much now know that 6 corporations own virtually all of our major TV and newspaper outlets in this country. So stuff's getting filtered in a way that, you know, unless you're listening to Diane Rehm, Democracy Now!, or unless you're listening to
Diane Rehm?
I don't mean Diane Rehm.
She's still a podcast, but yeah.
Bless her heart. That was a good Freudian slip. I so miss her. Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the other, what I would deem, and people that I respect deem, reputable news outlets that are really doing in-depth things instead of 3-second, you know, zips on everything. The false news thing is the biggest problem we have right now, because people like my father say, you know, but this is a fair and balanced TV news station. And I said, well, who says that? And he said, well, they do. And I'm like, Dad, you know, I've begged him to not even give it up, but at least try other news sources, you know. At least for a while when I came over to visit, he'd turn off the ubiquitous noise of the network that shall not be named. But now he's even forgotten to do that. So, yeah, I think, and I don't know if anyone else heard, this is a little bit off topic, but fake news, Radiolab just did this amazing...
It was amazing, yeah.
...thing on technology about now we can take famous people or even not so famous people and literally put words into their mouth, not just audibly, but to actually see them. So now we cannot believe anything we see.
Yeah, we're all very nervous about that, and maybe no one will believe anything soon enough. But I take the point on perception being reality. And so, Mark Cuddy, we've got a bit of a I'm in my mind seeing this risk-reward frame. Well, the reward of having fun, of doing these events together, is people get to laugh. Maybe people in power have to sort of eat a little crow or kind of show a little humility, poke fun at themselves if they have a sense of humor. And there's value to that. The risk is, for journalists, you look like you're in bed with them, and that there is a real reputational damage here. So do you see the reward is bigger than that? I understand what Dave Andreotta is saying about the possible risk there. What is the reward when we get together as someone who has some experience with that? How do you see that?
Well, of course, I'm not a journalist. I don't even play one on TV.
But you have opinions about journalists, and I don't think you would get involved with this stuff if you thought this would ruin journalists.
Well, you know, The plug for what we do every June, I write a 25 to 30 minute satire every year. It's a spoof. It's on a big gala for education in June. And we have journalists, media personalities, politicians all participate, corporate CEOs. There are about 25 people in the cast every year, and I write specifically for them to just what you said, to poke fun at themselves, to poke fun at Rochester, to poke fun at what's going on. And every politician does it without blinking. I mean, I have never had anyone say, no, I'm not going to do that. It doesn't matter who it is. It's whether it's the lieutenant governor, whether it's the mayor, whether it's state assembly people and state senators. They all say, yep, okay, boom. And they're... you know, they're actually looking forward to the release. They're, you know, it's not the same as what you're saying in terms of blending the journalism and political politicians joining together in humor, but they're on the same stage together, and they do poke fun at what's going on. I got to say, I'm just in favor of that kind of. I don't think anything is one way or the other. I think we live in this big gray kind of vacuum, and we need these little outlets of release, of expression, of laughter, as Linda was saying. You know, it's really important. It doesn't mean that at the end of the day, you believe everything, or that, you know, someone's a good person, someone's a bad person. It's a big mix, and I'm kind of rambling now because I think it's really healthy to our civilization here.
Okay, Dave.
Yeah, can I touch on something you mentioned? Risk and reward. I'd like to tell people what I think is a real reward of these, not necessarily of the types of events, but of what the types of events represent. What those types of events, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the Inner Circles, the LCA's events.
What they represent is
that the press and government do have a working relationship, and they sometimes do share a working family. And one of the rewards of having that working relationship is getting people in power to tell you stuff. That's how news is broken. I keep turning back to Maggie Haberman and Glenn Thrush because they've done such terrific work on the New York Times covering the White House. And, you know, Glenn is parodied on Saturday Night Live and Maggie Haberman is ubiquitous now. They were participants in these types of events early on. And they thrive on – their journalism thrives on the connections they have made throughout the course of their career. That doesn't mean that you have to then go, you know, dress in drag or whatever it is, like Rudy Giuliani did in an Inner Circle show and participate to that extent. But what these shows are embodiments of the work family and work relationship that the press and government do share. Though, and the rewards are real when you can have that relationship. What I worry about is what Chris was talking about is like the distance. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I don't think you said that we need to have distance where they're completely separated, because then you don't have those rewards. But when there's too much distance and the two sides aren't talking, Evan, you and I have had these conversations the pipeline to the information, whether it's coming out of the White House or town hall, can stop if you don't have those relationships. And I think it's important to keep them up.
All right, so listeners, I want to get our only break of the hour, and I want to read some of your comments. And we also want to listen to what the man who hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner said. Hasan Minhaj said, as a comedian of color, he was told by a lot of people, you can't do this. And his comments about that were very interesting. I want to listen to that. And we're going to come back. We'll take your calls if you want to join the program at 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. How did you feel about Sean Spicer at the Emmys and these sort of events where we try to laugh a little bit? So you can weigh in on that. We also have some emails to share as well. Our guests for the hour, Linda Starkweather, artist at large, Chris Thompson, comedian and activist, Dave Andriotta, columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle, Mark Cuddy, artistic director of Jiva Theater Center. We'll come right back here on Connections. And let me tell you what's coming up Thursday on the next Connections. We're broadcasting from WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, down in Geneva. In our first hour, the National Women's Hall of Fame recently inducted its new class. We're going to hear from some of the inductees. Then in our second hour, we explore the live music scene in Geneva with a new director of the Smith Center of the Arts and the founders of a new venue called FLX Live. That's tomorrow on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. It's nice that everybody can agree on that. Kai Ryssdal hates pumpkin spice, and everybody should. That's objective. We have a panel that agrees on some things, disagrees on others, but everyone can unite on how bad pumpkin spice.
There were five really nasty-looking faces made when they mentioned pumpkin.
Please do not call about pumpkin spice lattes. I was just kidding there. I do want to listen to what Hasan Minhaj said at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And these were his comments that he made in regards to this idea that with the policies of the Trump administration, should a comedian like him even take this job? And Donald Trump wasn't there, we know, but is this part of the normalization? There's a word you hear a lot. Is this too tacitly approving of something that should be protested and not joked about? And here is what he had to say about that.
I was asked to not roast the president and the administration in their absentia. And I completely understand that. We are in a very strange situation where there's a very combative relationship between the press and the president. But now that you guys are minorities, just for this moment, you might understand the position I was in it. And it's the same position a lot of minority kids feel in this country. And it's, do I come up here and just try to fit in and not ruffle any feathers? Or do I say how I really feel? Because this event is about celebrating the First Amendment and free speech. Free speech is the foundation of an open and liberal democracy. From college campuses to the White House, only in America can a first-generation Indian-American Muslim kid get on this stage and make fun of the president. The orange man behind the Muslim ban. And it's a sign to the rest of the world. It's this amazing tradition that shows the entire world that even the president is not beyond the reach of the First Amendment.
That's Hasan Minhaj, who was speaking at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Chris Thompson, agree or disagree?
I kind of agree. He's speaking to something that a lot of people think. In fact, I was going to make my own podcast called Things Black Folk Been Telling You That You're Just Learning Right Now. And
things like white people are like, I can't believe it. And all the people of color around them are like, can't believe it? I only told you this for years?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Like the whole premise of what he was saying, or the whole message of what he's saying about like assimilating in or you just, throwing everything out the window. That's something that a lot of people deal with, especially minorities, pretty much every day. And like him having that platform to say that is pretty unique. I would have never imagined, even with Donald Trump, not going to the thing, to have, a Muslim immigrant, child of immigrants, like at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Like that was absolutely amazing to me. So,
Linda, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of voices that have been silenced for a long time. And, it always comes down to whose truth is it. But if we don't listen to each other's truth is where we get in trouble. And just lest you think I don't have a sense of humor, I have a joke on perception. Perception is reality, right? So, because I think our perception is part of the problem here. We're just so stuck in our own need to be right and our way of thinking. So a guy walks into a psychiatrist's office with a duck on his head. The duck says, hey, can you get this guy off my butt? Ba-dum-bum, shh. All right. Silly joke, that Henny Youngman, kind of joke. But the fact is that we're all so wedded to our own perceptions and our own realities of how the world works, and we're not listening to each other. And, to drop your own perception or to decide you're not going to be, we're like compulsively defending our position as the right position. And to be wrong is to succumb to a kind of psychic or egoic death, which is why people won't even listen to the other side. It is too threatening to our egos to even say, oh, maybe you do have a point. So, yeah, so humor can help us get there, maybe. I don't know.
I think that's beautiful. And I think I try, and I probably fail way more often than I succeed, but I try to not, I try to listen instead of trying to formulate my own response. I try to internalize what someone is saying and absorb it, because that gives me a chance to occasionally change my mind. And then I try to celebrate when I change my mind, because that's empowering. That's why I tell my five-year-old, when you say I don't know or you change your mind, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, instead, and don't just celebrate always being right or never changing your mind and being obstinate. But I thought that... Beautifully said, by the way.
Thank you.
Who wrote the duck joke?
I don't know. It's a really old one.
Oh, okay. I never heard it.
It's been around for at least 60 years.
I never heard it. I want to grab a phone call. Kathy and Penyan on the phone. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi. I was just listening to Linda as I was waiting, and I think she has wonderful observations about human psychology. And something that I think we all ought to think about is our empathy for others. Where is that? Do we have it? Are we showing it? But that's not really why I called exactly, but this sort of dovetails. When we're talking about Spicer, I think we're forgetting something. This man was hired to do a job, and perhaps he had no idea what was going to be asked of him when he signed on, that he was going to be asked to misrepresent various things. I think in some ways this man might feel like he's been released from prison, that he's been released to be his own person, and that perhaps he had not set out to be in that kind of job in that kind of way. And I think that he was hysterical. I think he laughed at himself. And I think we need to think about what did he need, and maybe being released from that job and being able to say to the world, really, I was not trying to be this kind of person. He's probably rejoicing at his freedom.
Kathy, I want to thank you for the phone call, even though I couldn't disagree with you more. I think Sean Spicer, even Sean Spicer, who is not the pinnacle of intellect, would have known what that job entailed, I would think. Does anybody disagree? Does anybody think? And I don't mean to disrespect Kathy. I think that's a very optimistic view of Sean Spicer, but I'm not sure I can buy it.
Right. And I also agree with you, Evan, but... we don't know what the Sean Spicer story is going to play out in the next few chapters, right? He's clearly taking a different path than what he was locked into. And so I would agree with him. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna about this, but we don't know where he's going with this. We don't know really what his true feelings, if he has them. So it'll be interesting, that's all I'm saying, to see over the next year where he goes.
Most fascinating to me will be if he really doesn't do as well as he thinks he will on the speaking circuit, on a professional circuit, partially because he went out there and essentially admitted what everyone else always knew, but you have to play this game if you're a White House press secretary, whether you're Jay Carney or Ari Fleischer or whatever you are, that, no, everything I say is always exactly the truth. Well, Sean Spicer has been the one to come out and acknowledge that he has been a liar. And so if that injures him instead of allowing him to profit from it, that would be interesting. Chris just kind of gave me a little bit of an eye roll like, yeah, right, that's not going to happen. No?
Well, I don't know. I think... He, in order for him to not know what he was walking into, he would have had to have been holed up in like a mountaintop somewhere for like a good 2 years. Like everyone knew like the way Donald Trump ran. Spicer's career is essentially, you know, he was in the military. He worked for a couple of Republicans in Florida and New Jersey. So, like, he was definitely, like, at least a standard, I don't know, run-of-the-mill Republican? What do you call it? Like, party-line Republican? That's it. Party-line Republican. But, like, to go into an administration like this and knowing that it would be this unpredictable, you know, he should at least own up to that.
Yeah.
And maybe, I understand, I feel like he did get punished a couple of times. Like there was that whole thing of him not being able to see the Pope because Donald Trump told him he wasn't allowed. Maybe we hit a breaking point at one point and realized, you know, well, this is just like completely messed up. This is not going to be the Republican, you know, administration I thought it was going to be. But
you remember he resigned when Scaramucci got appointed. So. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we don't.
I've already forgotten about
that. No, please. I mean, we just don't know. I like to think good people until they're, you know, whatever. Let's see how this plays out, because it's not really about Sean Spicer, this issue.
Yeah.
It's more about this blending of perception and reality, I think.
Can
I just want him to just like go out and be like, look, man, I'm sorry. That's all I want. Yeah,
exactly.
All
well, that might
not
come.
Be
let's
allowed
see.
Just to joke about it, but to have to actually show some.
Right. Yeah. Like just
let's
show remorse.
Real repentance. Mm-hmm. And I do want to ask Mark Cuddy a question just about, I think what Hasan Minhaj said was, I'm up here roasting the president. We do at least, I think it's valuable to still treasure the fact that we don't have enough of a state apparatus that prevents us from doing that, like does happen in some other places. And I'm with Hasan there. Has any politician ever asked you to tone down a joke, Mark, for curtain call?
Yeah. Again, I've had so many politicians on the stage. No one has ever asked me to tone down a joke. However, one did ask me to reassign a joke, saying, that's funny. I can't say that. Can someone else in the scene say that because of their position? And it was a real political joke. So I went, sure, absolutely. And
but if someone said to you, look, tone this, I didn't sign up for this.
Nope.
You would
no
say
one has
no.
ever.
But what
ever
would you say if someone.
Well, what would I say? Say, I would say, everyone always does it. Everyone always says yes. This is a say yes. Cast and so no one else. I would use the precedent. I said no one else has ever asked me that. And I've been doing this since 2005. So and which started with because it's just funny. It started when I wrote a chorus line of candidates. We were doing a chorus line at the end of the season, and this was the mayoral race of 2005, in which Tim Maines, Wade Norwood, Bob Duffy, and John Perinello were running for mayor, and I had them all sing a song. A la a chorus line about their, and I wrote these funny lyrics. And Bob Duffy tells a story that he was at rehearsal. We only rehearsed for once, right? So, and he's sitting there and he hears Tim Maines, who's a performer, sing beautifully. He hears Wade Norwood sing his song beautifully, his beautiful voice. And Bob's thinking in his seat going, oh man, I'm going to get crushed. But then, fortunately, John Perinello stands up, and not only is John he was a good sport. Not only was he tone deaf, he had never heard this song before. It was a song from a chorus line, and he was horrible and off, and Bob sat up straight and went, "Okay, well, I can do better than that." And, but they put themselves on the line, and so no one's ever said no.
Oh, at least I'm glad to hear that. Here's James writes to the program. Jim says the Sean Spicer episode at the Emmys was morally revealing in the same way as a George W. Bush appearance at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Bush got a big laugh with pictures showing him bumbling, searching for weapons of mass destruction under the furniture in the Oval Office. It was as if he found it hilarious that he committed one of the biggest foreign policy blunders in U.S. history, which killed thousands of Americans and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, maimed many thousands more, cost U.S. taxpayers trillions, turned Iraq into a smoking wreck, and dishonored our country. Ha ha ha, very funny. Spicer did the same thing, and the blame falls on him, not Colbert or the Emmys or anyone else. That comes from Jim. Chris, what do you think?
I love the fact that he has no chill about that. That is, I can't disagree with him. Like that's, like I said, I just want an apology out of him. Like own up to what you did. Own up to what he contributed to, perpetuate like the amount of lies. Like in what, 6 months? When was it? Yeah, like July, 6 or 7 months, in that time.
It does feel like years, doesn't it?
It feels, yeah.
This is a year that
But Sean
like
Spicer
years.
Was not the president of the United States.
That's true.
I mean, this is two true. Very different examples, and he didn't have the power. He was just.
He's a mouthpiece.
He was a mouthpiece.
Okay.
He was just doing his job.
Oh, come I've on.
Heard that many.
Come on. I know, but he really, absolutely, and he was complicit, but he didn't have that power.
He's also a grown adult. Like, let's not act like he's like
oh,
no. a 5-year old. Like if you're a grown adult, you go into an industry knowing what you're supposed to do. You have to be like at least tacitly complicit in yep. what you're doing. Like I worked in defense for 15 years before I finally got out because I finally couldn't rationalize, working for companies where they were making bombs when I say I'm a pacifist. You got to do that. Like, what's he rationalizing in his head?
Can't just say it's the job if you right. if you want to stick to your values. Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, I was just going to say. So it's we have a systemic problem in the world. It's not just our country in terms of corruption and integrity. We are no longer someone evoked Walter Cronkite's name earlier. He was once voted the most trusted man in America. Mm-hmm. And it, once upon a time, integrity really had value. And now it seems that we worship career and we worship money and we worship our futures instead of worshiping our integrity. Otherwise, like you say, once you know what you didn't know, you can't unknow it, right? So once you put all the pieces together and know that that doesn't line up with my values, how do you stay in the job unless you don't care about integrity and honesty and truth?
It's been a hard week at the Democrat and Chronicle. I just want to say, Dave Andretta, I'm just going to say to all of your colleagues, I respect you and what they do, and it's vital. A free press and a strong press is vital. So take that message. Not totally related, but I will also say
Amen.
That it's fun seeing the talent in this room. I'm sensitive to the discussion on where lines are, but I appreciate you all being here. So I just want to start with Dave. So please take that message back.
I will, and thank you. You've always been a great supporter of the paper, always giving it a plug, so thank you.
Well, the Democrat and Chronicle is just one of many hometown papers that you want to see journalism really suffer if they're gone completely, but we're not going to let that happen, are we, Rochester? No, we are not. Dave Andretta from the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, Dave. Getting
Thanks.
Shows on stage soon?
Nothing soon. Nothing soon, but hopefully in the future.
What about you, Chris? Are you performing anywhere soon?
Not yet. I had a performance in Labor Day. I'm looking forward to maybe in the next month or so.
10 seconds, Linda. What are you doing?
Traveling with a Broken Compass. My one-woman show will be at Muck Theater in November and also at Cuca College.
We'll see you there. And I know where you are at Jeeva, Mark Cuddy.
Yeah,
we'll see you there.
Knows.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.